What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Geno Time Podcast here on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. We are brought to you by Bet Online. My name is Tom Westerholm, Celtics beat writer for Mass Live, and I am joined by Nicole Yang of the Boston Globe and good pal Sam Sheehan. Go Nucks. How you doing, man?
Go Nucks. They're currently playing right now. They're up 1-0. So by the time you hear this, you'll either know that I failed miserably or we got game 7 tonight.
Or you won't know either of those things because you don't follow the Nucks.
There's a pretty big crossover, I think, between Celtics fans.
And any crossover there is for Celtics fans and the Canucks is probably spurred on by you.
Well, that's great.
Congrats, guys. I was going to say, we've been calling them the Nucks, so even people who might know who the Canucks are might be very confused anyway.
So. It's the Nucks. We're starting the Nuckus. It's fine.
So we're mostly talking about the Nucks right now because the Celtics blew that one. Recording a couple hours after game 3, the Celtics had a chance to go up 3-0. They were up by a point with 0.5 seconds remaining. OG Anunoby hit a 3 to put Toronto kind of back in the series. So throw it out to you guys. I mean, what was your takeaway from the final play? What was your takeaway from kind of game 3 in general?
I mean, the final play, I still don't totally understand, like, how it happened. I feel like you do kind of have to tip your cap a little bit, I guess, to Nick Nurse on this one for a crafty ATO that could sort of flummox. I mean, what happened there was the Celtics were zoned up, right? Am I wrong there?
I honestly think that the players are right in that it was just a giant miscommunication. They kept reiterating that, and I don't think that's just like fallback. Like, I genuinely think it was a miscommunication. So, like, it's hard to say without the visual, but in trying to explain it, Tatum starts in like the corner closest to the Raptors bench on Anunoby. And then Anunoby starts to like creep along the baseline. But when Marcus Smart gestures, he's pointing for Tatum to stay in that corner because Fred VanVleet like appears to go to that corner. And Kyle Lowry said after the game that initially the play was for Fred VanVleet. By the time Anunoby gets to the opposite corner, he's just wide open. Kyle Lowry spots him. Jalen's caught up in the paint with Marc Gasol. And Kyle just throws this incredible pass. And by the time it's in the air and Jaylen Brown realizes what's happening, he's the closest defender. So he just turns, sprints, offers the late contest, puts his hand up. But I think it was just a miscommunication because after Tatum stays in that corner to keep track of VanVleet, somebody was supposed to rotate to Anunoby and nobody took him.
It looks like Daniel Theis thought that Smart was saying that he should go guard VanVleet because Theis switches on to VanVleet instead of staying on Gasol. But if Theis had stayed on Gasol, everything probably would have been fine because Tatum went to go guard VanVleet. Smart was up at the top to guard the pin down that Gasol went to try to free Pascal Siakam, which would have freed Jalen to go guard Anunoby. I know that's a lot of things for people to try to visualize just from us talking, but like, I think what happened was Theis and Tatum weren't sure who was supposed to guard VanVleet, and as a result, they both did. That's what put Jalen in the position to have to guard both Gasol and Anunoby.
Jalen had to suck in for the run, like the man in the lane. Like, and that's how the corner opened up. The question is, like, how did Gasol shake loose? And that all sounds right to me, that there was a miscommunication on who was supposed to guard VanVleet in the near corner. But, I mean, it is very hard to, like, see in real time. And, you know, it does require a perfect pass by Lowry and very quick shot by Anunoby that he somehow got off. And just, I don't know. I don't think Taco being on the court really had anything to do with it. I know people were mad about that, but his job was basically just be big. I don't think that was necessarily like overthinking anything unless that substitution was what confused guys. You know, if you practice guarding plays a certain way and guys rotating a certain way, maybe that could account for the, you know, that stuff. I don't know. Yeah, I do think this was like Brad's worst coached game so far. Seems like he could have called a few timeouts a little earlier in the third, and not really sure what Enes Kanter was doing out there today, but that's my take on why the Raptors had a chance to win it at the end.
Well, just one more last thing on the final play of the game. This wasn't even their second option. Their second option was a play for Siakam, Kyle Lowry said. So I feel like this was...
Which is what Smart was cutting off.
I feel like this honestly was like, kudos to Kyle Lowry and kudos to OG Anunoby. Like, that pass was incredible. Like, that pass totally outdid Kemba's incredible pass to Theis, literally the play before. And then, like you said, Sam, OG gets that shot off so fast. Like, it wasn't even a question if it was in time.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't even think it's like a tip your cap to Nick Nurse thing necessarily. Both of his options were completely stymied by the zone. Like, the Celtics had a miscommunication. They had a breakdown. And Lowry, I mean, like you said, all credit in the world. That was an incredible pass. And Ananobi had to hit a really tough shot. And it was just kind of like one of those things. I actually do want to, if everybody's good on that final play, I do want to get into the Cantor thing, because I 100% agree with you, Sam, that this was Stephen's worst game in like a little while, because I don't see what the vision was for Enes Kanter coming in there. Like, after the game, Brad said something about rebounds, which, like, I guess. And then I know that, you know, having Kanter against the zone offensively makes some sense, but I just kind of felt like, look, let your stars figure out how to play against the zone. Let them just figure it out. Like, you don't need Enes Kanter in there. And then as soon as Kanter came in, all of the Raptors players started getting really comfortable. Like, you could just tell that there was like a different swagger to the way they were playing, a different sort of confidence when they were shooting. And I really do think that having Enes Kanter in the game and just like giving them a chance to tee off against him. I don't love dumping on Enes Kanter. I really don't. You know what he is.
Yeah. I mean, Sam, on the other hand, I think loves dumping on Enes
Kanter. I do. Okay.
Let him have at it.
Well, I'll just finish by saying, you know what Enes Kanter is. You know what he's going to give you. Like, you can't expect him to be something different than he's been for like his entire career. And what he has been his entire career is somebody who does not match up well with this Raptors team. Okay, go ahead and dump on Enes Kanter.
Okay. Well, first off, normally, yes. Now that I've been vindicated, because a huge amount of my Enes Kanter slander, let's say, was because I thought Rob Williams deserved more of a chance, like in the regular season. I wanted to see Robert Williams get more work in the regular season, because I did see that he would be valuable in playoff matchups like this. And I think I'm kind of vindicated at this point, now that Rob has been, you know, a pretty big part of the Raptors. Still really haven't come up with a way to beat Rob. Rob's only ever beat himself, and it hasn't been that bad. So, you know, I think I'm vindicated there. What I want to stress here, because I think that what people get tied up with Enes Kanter is, like, you know, he's scoring, he's rebounding. The score is not changing that much. Like, I don't know what he was in plus minus. I would guess it was not that much of a difference. It was like probably like -2 or something like that, or -3. The difference is, what had led up to that was the Celtics had started the third quarter cold, as Tom had said. And you have a team that is not handling the zone well. And the Raptors are slowly creeping back in it. But I think it was coming after, like, I think 6 minutes of the score barely changing for either side. Yeah. Like, the Raptors were gaining ground, but it was like 6 points or something like that over like a long period of time. It was a rock fight. The Raptors were not comfortable, just the Celtics were less comfortable. I think that sort of how this series has played out so far, the Celtics have looked like the better team the entire series, like the more talented team. When everything settles down and, you know, sort of all the water levels return to level, it looks like this is a series that like favors the Celtics. So I think that by bringing in Enes Kanter, even though you are, you know, you are kickstarting the offense, you are generating things, it's not an offense that involves other Celtics. So nobody else is really getting a rhythm from that. You know, he's getting rebounds. He is extending plays sometimes. He is scoring points. He is treading water. But the Raptors, as Tom said, just got so comfortable being able to do so much out of the pick and roll and get these wide open threes that I really do think that that kind of changed the complexion of the game. Even though they were kind of coming back before that, it felt like the same kind of rock fight where it was like, talent's eventually going to win out here. And I really think Stephen should have just let Jason Tatum eventually figure it out, because I'm pretty sure he would have.
Well, and like, there's two things about that. One, I don't understand what the thinking is there, because like let's say that the zone continues to hurt you. Are you committed to playing Enes Kanter against the zone, like, going forward? Like, I feel like you just kind of have to figure it out a little bit. Even if Kanter comes in and plays well against the zone, what does that do for you in game 4? Like, in game 4, when they go zone again, are you going to bring Enes Kanter back? Like, I just don't think that's, like, a feasible thing. I don't understand the thinking there at all. I think the shot that really kind of made me think, like, oh, yeah, the Raptors are, like, back now, was that Lowry 3. Because Lowry had not made a 3, and then all of a sudden he's like fading to his left and he hits this tough shot, and it's like, that's a rhythm shot. Like, that's a shot where a guy has gotten himself comfortable, and I really think it was because he and the Raptors had just kind of teed off against a guy who can't guard the pick and roll.
It seems like if it's broke, don't fix it type of thing, right? Like, you know, I know that they barely won game 2, but I mean, the Raptors haven't proven to me that they know what to do with Robert Williams yet. I just don't think that, and I know that Daniel Theis has had his own ups and downs, the war on Theis continues, but you don't need to make an adjustment. If you're the team who's winning, the team who's up 2-0, you don't need to make an adjustment until they do. It just felt a little quick on Brad's part to me, to give him credit where credit is due. I think playing Enes Kanter in the Sixers series was a huge part of that too, of like really breaking their back. So, you know, credit where credit is due there, but this is just not the series for Enes Kanter. It's just not. There's no reason. Anytime Marc Gasol plays, that's a win for the Boston Celtics. That's just got to be how Brad's looking at it going forward, in my opinion.
I think that's exactly right. It is one of those things, too, where it's like, I think that the Celtics would be, you know, I'm sure this is a very difficult loss for everybody involved, like Jalen. There were a bunch of Celtics media people saying they hadn't heard Jalen curse in Boston. I was like, I've heard this several times.
Yes. Maybe we don't hear like 3 F-bombs in one press conference, but he's definitely sworn before. Like I was,
yeah.
Everyone's.
I can think of 3 specific examples off the top of my head. I don't understand why, like, everybody was trying to make this into this. Actually, like, the media coverage, it's so overwrought, like, right now. I think it's because nobody's down there, so, like, everybody's, like, trying to make, like, a big deal out of everything. Yeah. I get it's the playoffs, but everybody's trying to, like, ratchet it up several degrees. Like, Jalen has never cursed. Like, what are you talking about? Jalen curses all the time. Not Rob, but he curses a fair amount. Like, you know, like all this stuff about like, now we're going to see if the Celtics are mentally tough enough. It's like, I think they're probably mentally tough enough.
Yeah,
they've been here before. Fine. Like, what are we doing here? Like, it's a 2-1 series in a series that most people expected to be, you know, probably 2-1 at this point.
And then like Toronto media goes and compares this to Kawhi's shot. And it's like, I guess like they were both buzzer beaters, but like that was game 7, a shot that bounced 4 times on the rim. And they went on to win the championship.
How
is this comparable? This is game 3. Like everyone just needs to calm down. I saw one Raptors reporter post a clip of OG's shot with the broadcast call for Kawhi's shot. And I was like, what are we doing here?
Yes. Yes. Awesome. So cool. Oh, no, I love that. All right. I'm coming around. I'm a Raptors fan now. Sorry, guys. I don't know. I saw one of the Raptors reporters, like, would Smart, I don't, it was game 2 and Smart flopped. One of the Raptors reporters was going off demanding he get
food. I tweeted that exact tweet at Nicole. It was so good. Or I texted that exact tweet to Nicole. It was so good. It was like, Marcus Smart deserves to be arrested and prosecuted for the full extent of the law.
They wanted Marcus Smart to, like, they wanted him to, there was a Hatch Act violation. They wanted him brought up on a Hatch Act violation. Oh, God. Bottom line is it's a tough loss for the Celtics, you know, especially because they really had the Raptors like in a corner. It really felt like to me after game 2 that was kind of the best punch that the Raptors had. And the fact that the Celtics were able to extinguish that and kind of nudge them, you know, a little bit closer. It felt like this was kind of the Celtics game to lose, but then they did. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, like the Raptors are clearly champions. Like Kyle Lowry's that dude.
Yes.
We've said a lot about like Kyle Lowry, but like he really is like that dude. Like he's missed so many shots in the first 2 games and he's still like just down the stretch getting buckets like multiple times. Like I think he probably got fouled like twice down the stretch on like driving to the rim, getting buckets that like weren't called. You know, the Raptors clearly have more mental fortitude than the Sixers. This is not the, you know, same series. This series will probably end up going 6 eventually. I would think. I do think the Celtics still have this, you know, pretty well in hand. Do you guys want to talk about minutes, by the way? That was something I noticed. The Raptors played a lot of minutes tonight, like the starters.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. Yeah, wow. Lowry played 46 minutes. To your point about Lowry being that dude, like he can't hit right now. He cannot find it from 3, and he's a good shooter. Mm-hmm. And he is still just like really – I mean, he had 31 points tonight. Like he is really impacting the game. Like he's really good.
I mean, before those back-to-back plays at the end, he had those 2 layups, and you could tell he was like, I'm taking matters into my own hands. Like, I'm just going to go to the hoop. And he did. Like you said, he's hasn't been shooting well, but, like, he can still get a bucket, and it's really impressive.
I guess just, like, some impressions I've had of the Raptors. Like, I mean, like, Siakam obviously is having a tough series because the Celtics have so many guys they can throw at him that are all, like, perfectly suited to guard him. Like Grant Williams has done a really pretty good job on him. Like Shemmy can guard him, and those are just
Jalen's.
Like, like working my way up to the guy who has done an amazing job, which is Jalen. Like Jalen has been incredible. I am so impressed by Ananobi. I know that's an easy thing to say after he hits like the game winner, but like he's been so good and just so rock solid defensively. Like
And honestly, like, I know it's like in vogue, but like people were like dumping dirt on him 2 years ago. Serge Ibaka has been very solid this year.
Yeah.
For the Raptors. Like, I think they would be up Doo-Doo Creek without a paddle if Serge Ibaka was not here. Cause I'm just going to say it. Marc Gasol looks cooked out there. Every minute that Marc Gasol is playing is a win for the Celtics to me. He can't guard anyone. Like, I know he's like getting some points here. He can still screen. He can still do some things, but that's something the Celtics have to take advantage of because and go, you know, as many out as they can at a time because Marc Gasol he's done, man.
I thought Nick Nurse was going to make a starting lineup change and put Serge Ibaka in the starting lineup, but
I could have seen that. I don't understand why Chris Boucher isn't like playing at all. Like, I know he's not like a perfect matchup for the Celtics, but like, I mean, it's not like Gasol has been, I don't know. I just don't think Gasol has been very good. I mean, I'm sure there's a good reason why, because I haven't necessarily seen like a ton of Raptors fans screaming like, hey, put Chris Boucher in the game. I would give it a shot. Like, I mean, I feel like every time, you know, one of the Celtics gets downhill against Gasol, it's going to be a good look.
I think Nick Nurse does have a little bit of a chess match going on where Ibaka is kind of the best bet against Rob. And I think that if you put one of the other slower bigs in, it'll be even worse. And I do think it's kind of smart to have, if you want to maximize damage against Rob, have him lunging out to block shots on the perimeter is probably where you're going to get Rob in the most trouble a lot of the time. So like he's done a good job sometimes, but he's done a bad job other times. It's been kind of a Russian roulette a little bit with Rob closing on Ibaka out on like the 3-point line. So I sort of get that, but I do agree that like, if the problem is like, should I start Chris Boucher or like, you know, Marc Gasol, and is that going to like make him, if it's like a politics thing for the Raptors, brother, you got to get past that. Like you need to do something. Yeah. Like you need to do something here. Well, I say that after they won the game though. So I guess we wouldn't see that till like game 5 or game 6, hypothetically, but we'll see.
I also kind of don't get, I know he's not a perfect player. I don't get totally why Norm Powell isn't playing a little bit more. Because I feel like every time that dude shoots, I'm pretty convinced it's going in. Like, and, you know, he's been shooting since the playoffs started, he's shooting like well over 40% from three. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to like doubt Nick Nurse. He's a great coach. But like, I feel like that he's done some things in this series that I've kind of scratched my head at a little bit.
When I was like gaming out before like game 3, like what adjustments I would make if I were a scrambling Nick Nurse, I think that the one I would make is to try and play 5 out more.
Right.
No center, you know, no play Siakam at the 5 and just see what happens. It's not like the Celtics, besides Cantor, the Celtics don't really have a, you know, a wide assortment of guys who are going to hurt you for that. Siakam's strong enough to like, I think, survive against Tyson Robert Williams. Like, you know, I don't think you're going to get pounded there any worse than you are otherwise.
Well, I think the only problem with that is that it gives the Celtics a chance to play like their best 5. Although I guess their best 5 aren't available now because Gordon Hayward's injured. Yeah. That wouldn't work. Yeah, no, that could work. You guys want to do some sort of quick hitters here? What are a couple other things that kind of stood out to you?
Well, so just to Sam's point earlier, this isn't necessarily a quick hitter, but I was getting ready to come on this podcast and be like, yeah, the Celtics are like championship contenders and like they're just going to go to the finals. Like, I mean, the fact that like Gordon Hayward isn't available right now, Tatum had like didn't have a good night tonight. He scored 15 points on 5-for-18 shooting.
Oh, I don't think he had a good night, period. Yeah.
1-for-4 from 3. Like, he was sort of a non-factor. And the fact that they like basically should have won the game, like, that's really impressive. And they've looked, I think they've been the best playoff team. I don't know. I feel like this is usually Sam's take that he's starting to feel things, but like, I just feel like they're a hard team to beat. Like,
I mean, in the same way that we shouldn't overreact to the Celtics, like blowing out the Raptors in game 1, we shouldn't overreact to the Raptors hitting like a corner 3 at the buzzer. Like, I think all of those things are still true. Like, the Celtics have still looked really good through 6 games. The Heat still have a really good chance to knock off the Bucks.
No, yeah. I agree. It sounds premature to be like the Celtics are going to the finals right now.
Yeah, this.
Like, now is probably not the time for that take, but if they had won, I would be ready to like dish that out.
Right. I mean, I think that's still where a lot of people's heads fit. It's where my headspace is at. Yeah. Like, I've kind of been thinking that ever since. I've kind of been thinking that since we like smacked around the Sixers. It's hard not to look down the line and see how everything's lining up for them. Like, I really do still feel like the Celtics are very much in control of this thing. I'm kind of opening myself up to some some bad things here, you know, things do turn around. But I didn't get the impression that the Raptors solved anything this game.
All right, so just a couple of quick hitters I had. Early in the first quarter, I thought one smart thing that Brad did in a game where I didn't think he had his best game, I liked subbing Tatum out early and bringing in Shemmy right away for two reasons. One, obviously Tatum with the second unit has had some success in the past. But two, I think that puts a lot less pressure on Shemmy when he is asked to do a lot. He sometimes struggles. When you put him in with all the other starters, he really is just like that release valve, you know, stand behind the three-point line, maybe take a shot if it comes out to you, you know, just kind of let the game happen around you and then, you know, participate when it requires that. In terms of trying to buy some minutes via Shemmy, I thought that was a good way to try to do that and to try to put Shemmy in a position to succeed as well.
I think that's an underrated strategy, I think, when it comes to Shemmy, especially just because, you know, for all those reasons you just laid out, you know, that Shemmy is not the Celtics' most skilled player. I don't think I'm stretching anything to say that, but, you know, he is very tough, very generally, like, knows what to do and is, you know, relatively switchable. So I think the more talent you have out there with Shemmy, the better chance you give him to succeed. And that's not something that's necessarily true of some of the other Celtics rotation players. Like, I don't think Brad Wanamaker, it's the same thing because he, you know, he kind of needs to handle the ball sometimes. And I do think that that is like an interesting wrinkle for Stevens to have. And I think that that's something he could even experiment with too. I also don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world for him to try that for Tice sometimes.
Yes.
And you know, just have Shemmy play center and just see what happens. That's something that has happened in like past seasons, the Shemmy at center. And it's worked pretty well. And I think Shemmy's strong enough and Marc Gasol is washed enough that you might be able to get away with that at some points in this series.
The Celtics bench deserves some credit so far because I think heading into the postseason, they rightfully were getting a lot of criticism just because they don't produce. And that's still true. Like, I think Robert Williams is the only reserve that has had like double digit points, but it's not like in the bench minutes, the Celtics are getting killed or like it's a very obvious drop off from starters. I mean, I guess there is an obvious drop off just because the Celtics are so top heavy, but it's not, I guess, as big as a drop off as maybe fans were initially worried about.
Grant Williams played 18 minutes tonight and was plus 11.
And that doesn't seem like an anomaly so far.
I would agree.
That being said, like they haven't really played teams. Like they played the Sixers who, I mean, their starting lineup was already like very fragile. So they were not very deep. And then the Raptors theoretically, I guess, are deep, but like Sam noted, they stuck to their starters tonight. So I guess like that might be more of an issue against the Bucks, which last season the Bucks bench killed the Celtics. So we'll see if that holds true, but so far the Celtics bench has been like very much, as Brad would say, like playing their role, doing a good job within their role.
Yeah, I don't think that you would have predicted that in game three of the series the Celtics would play 11 players and the Raptors would play 8. Of those 8 players, only 7 played double digit minutes because one of them was Matt Thomas, who came in and like kind of low-key played pretty good defense against Jason Tatum before the Raptors subbed him out and kind of panicked.
Just real quick, Quinn Hughes just scored on assist from JT Miller, so our Knucks are up 3-0. Let's go.
Go Knucks.
Go Knucks.
So this is probably not very engaging content, but I'll ask anyway. Is there an Enes Kanter on the
Yes.
Knucks?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked. His name was Adam Gaudet, and he's terrible. He's a Braintree boy, though, so I don't think that's probably a bad thing to bring up here. But
I was going to say that name sounds familiar. I think I've heard people talk about him before.
Yeah, he's definitely, like, while you guys have been covering, I'm sure he was a big deal, like, while you guys have been, like, covering Boston area sports. So he's a Braintree hockey genius, but not in the NHL.
A couple other quick things. Jason Tatum was passing. I know we touched on it in the last episode. That dude is progressing very quickly as a passer. It's pretty crazy to watch him out of the pick and roll. I mean, he's going to be running a whole lot of pick and roll over the next 4 years or however long he's in Boston. And the more he does it, the more comfortable he gets just kind of slinging that thing around, like to the 3-point line, you know, throwing little lobs here and there. I think he threw a nice one to Tice today. Yet again, Tatum's passing, I thought, looked really good tonight.
Question to a question. Where do you guys think Jason Tatum is? Like, if you guys were, you know, if there was like a NBA draft for like everybody in the league and, you know, you're trying to win this season and you're picking all the guys, where do you guys think Jason Tatum is right now?
I mean, I would take him in the top 10.
That's kind of what I was getting at, is that I think he's there. Like, yeah. I really think he's become, Nicole brought it up, so I don't feel too bad saying this. I think he's become best player on a championship team guy. Not like a LeBron style, like, best player on the championship team and like the engine and there's no help, but he could be the best player on a championship team.
So this might sound ridiculous because of how well he's been playing, and he had that really great stretch after being named an All-Star. But I think the biggest question with Tatum is like, okay, can he really do this for 8 weeks or however long the playoffs are going to be? Because I guess prior to his budding superstardom, he's always been kind of like a streaky player and had cold streaks and stuff. And I don't know, we haven't seen that yet. Like, we haven't really seen an extended one in a while, but I'm curious to see whether that will hit him. So far, they've seemed to just be like a game or two, usually one, but I'm curious to see if he sort of experiences that at all.
Like, yes, I've also wondered that, Nicole. I guess I feel a lot more confident in him since he had that hot stretch and then he came into the bubble, and obviously he had the first game that was really bad, and ever since then he's just been magnificent. So, you know, I mean, I don't think he's going to shoot 46% from three for the rest of his life, but like, maybe he will. When you take like his on-off splits, so the Bucks, for example, were plus 13.8 when Giannis was on the floor. The Celtics were plus 11 when Tatum was on the floor. Like, I think he's going to be a volume scorer for quite a while. I mean, I'm sure, like right now in the playoffs, he's averaging, it's probably gone down a little bit. I know he was averaging about 27 points, 28 points per game before tonight. We know he's going to be a really good defender. We know he's going to be a really good passer. Like, you know, this is obviously really premature, but I mean, I think like 2-3 years down the road, I mean, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if you're talking about Tatum in like the MVP discussion.
Oh, I for sure wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Like, if the Celtics are still good and he's easily their best player and he's putting up numbers like this, it's like, I don't know what other conclusions you could draw at this point.
He's in the perfect situation. And like you just described, his game is perfect to be in that discussion if everything sort of follows that trajectory.
You know, everyone's starting to realize that his idol growing up was Kobe, and everyone's starting to realize that like Tatum's offense looks like Kobe. You know, he's streaky like Kobe, but you know, his ceiling is becoming a modern version of Kobe that can, you know, play defense. And that's a very scary player. You know, obviously we're talking about, you know, to your point, we're talking about an MVP here. You know, we're really starting to see like some pretty lofty ceiling things. You know, I'd be surprised if he's not a fringe all NBA guy for at least, you know, the next 5 or 6 years of his career at this point, you know.
For so sure.
And it's just, we've come, you know, so far, and that's to say nothing of, you know, anybody else on the team or what might happen going forward. So good on Jason Tatum. He's a good player.
More and more people are saying it. What if Tatum is just like taller Kobe who can shoot threes? That would be pretty insane.
And plays elite, you know, help and transition deep, like help.
And who actually earns his spot on his all defense team.
Right, exactly.
I would not be surprised if the next stage in his development is just like expanding his range even farther. Like, he'll shoot the occasional three from like a step beyond the 3-point line. I wouldn't be surprised if 2 years from now he's launching from like
the Damian Lillard distance.
Maybe not like, quite the Dame distance, but like far. Like, you're like, oh wow, that was deep, and then it's just cash.
The Pierce style, I would guess.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Well, we will leave it there, guys. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to anybody who's rated and reviewed the show. We really appreciate you. Feel free to hit any of us up. Don't hit Sam up. Don't subject him to anything.
You can. You can. I already have all the most crazy psychos in my mentions. It's fine. Everybody else, hop in.
Adam Gaudette's family members are about to come.
Yeah. They're invited. I forgive Adam already. The Knucks are up 4-0 now with 2 minutes left.
On that note, we will talk to you guys all after game 4.